It is 1:02 p.m. We are here today, December 11, 2017, in the Hopia Hearing Room, Suite 907 of DNA Building in Hagane, Guam, for the motions hearing of OPAPA 17-010 CORSEC International Corp. versus the Department of Public Works. Presiding over the hearing today are Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Yuka Hechinova and Jared Hernandez. Will Appellant CORSEC please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good afternoon, Anita Ariola for Appellant CORSEC International Corporation. I have no client representatives today.
Thank you. Will Purchasing Agency GPW please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, Thomas Keeler from the Attorney General's Office. Also present is the Purchasing Agency's representative, DPW's Deputy Director, Andrew Leon Guerrero.
Thank you. We may proceed.
All right, so Ms. Ariola, we're here for your three motions. And we're going to start with your leave for leave to file a partial motion of summary judgment that was filed on November the 14th, 2017. So you have the floor on that motion.
Thank you. So yes, we filed a motion for leave to file motion for partial summary judgment because, as you know, the motion deadline in this case already passed, and it was quite soon after the filing of the notice of appeal. But after reviewing all of the documents and the records, and in particular, the agency report that was filed by DPW, we are of the mind of filing a motion for partial summary judgment on two issues. One is the issue regarding liquidated damages and whether or not those are properly before the OPA, because it is our contention that substantial completion occurred well over a year ago and well before DPW claims that substantial completion occurred. They claim that substantial completion occurred in August of 2016. We claim that it occurred way longer before that. In other words, at the time that the first and the second bridge were completed and were turned over to DPW for beneficial use and occupation. In addition, the sidewalks that are claimed to be defective or not in conformance with the Americans Disabilities Act, the sidewalks, the ramps, and the driveways were also completed and were accepted by DPW for beneficial use and occupancy. And under the doctrines, as we understand it, of beneficial use and substantial completion, liquidated damages cannot be assessed or should be reduced significantly based on those doctrines. So that's the first issue that we want to file a motion for partial summary judgment on. The other motion for partial summary judgment that we want to add is the allegedly non-compliant sidewalks, ramps, and driveways, which DPW claims are defective under the American Disabilities Act. Our argument on that is that DPW has already paid in full for all of those items. All the sidewalks, all the ramps, and all the driveways were fully paid for, and under the contract, when you have fully paid for, whether you call it conforming or non-conforming items, it's considered acceptable work, and that acceptable work is paid for in accordance with the contract, and therefore they have no claim for any termination of the contract based on those non-compliant items. Just, you know, for as a little bit of background, DPW terminated our contract in large part because of those ADA items, and they claimed that we never completed them, we didn't remedy them or put them up to the standards or the specifications of the ADA. And our complaint or our claim is that our defense is that they were fully compliant. And that they were already fully paid for by DPW. And as such, they were accepted as acceptable and conforming work. And because of that, you know, we would like to file a motion for partial summary judgment on both of those issues, because we believe that those are two separate and discrete issues that can be parceled out decided without having to go through an entire hearing on both those issues. But even if the motion for partial summary judgments are not granted, It would certainly narrow the scope of issues and the evidence to be presented at a hearing, and so we think it would be extremely helpful to the OPA and to the parties to file a motion for leave, or to file a motion for partial summary judgment on those issues. I do want to say that I was a little bit confused about the opposition or the response filed by DPW. So they filed an opposition to a motion for summary judgment. And just to make clear, we have not filed any motion for summary judgment.
That was my understanding.
We have
as
not
well.
Filed a motion okay. for partial summary judgment. We just filed a motion for leave because, you know, sometimes in court you can file a motion and then you tack on, you know, can I have permission? But I, you know, didn't want to do that here because the motion deadline had passed.
Okay, so but I understand simply, the substance of your motion.
Right, it's simply a motion for leave to file a motion for partial summary judgment. So, you know, in my reply, I have indicated that because they didn't file an opposition to the motion for leave, our motion for leave should be granted.
Thank you.
Do you want me to go through all the motions, or do you want me to
just that?
Just
well,
one at
we'll
a time?
Go one at a time. You'll have a okay. chance to reply to anything that okay. Mr. Keeler says to each motion as well. Okay, Mr. Keeler, I imagine you oppose the motion.
Yes, we do.
Okay, you have the floor for your opposition.
You may sit. You don't.
Yeah,
have
you don't
to
have
sit.
To sit.
Sorry, well, I meant to say that.
They're used to being in federal court. So
yeah. With regards, the council raised 2 points: liquidated damages. Those are provided for in the contract. Up until the date of substantial completion, they were $3,300 a day. Subsequent to substantial completion, which was granted in August 25th, 2016, they were reduced to $600 a day. So the government's position is that they have fully complied with the contract terms. With regards to the motion, we filed an opposition just to make sure that it was covered. Our response with regards to liquidated damages and the non-ADA or the acceptance of the non-ADA compliant work is that the motion deadline has passed. Specifically with, and we'd also like to add with regards to the issue as to whether or not there's been non-compliant work, that should not be an issue. CoreTech prepared a survey on October 9th, 2014, in which its own survey acknowledged and documented that over 58% of the project sidewalks non-compliant with the American Disabilities Act. So there is no issue. That is a fact. With regards to payment, the government has over $570,000 in retention. Purpose of the retention is to address non-compliant work as well as to complete the work.
Yeah, but the main gist of your opposition is that the motion deadline has passed, and the two issues raised by, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Areola, are really non-issues?
Correct.
Okay. And, all right. Did you have anything else?
Nothing further.
Okay, for this motion. Okay, Ms. Areola?
If you don't mind, I'm going to stand just because of my back.
whatever makes you feel comfortable.
Thank you. So let's talk about this motion for leave to file motion for partial summary judgment. The deadline to file the motions in this case, any motions, was pretty quickly held or was pretty quickly established, you know, right after the notice of appeals were filed. And we did not have the benefit of the agency report, the comments, the hearing brief, and the exhibit and witness list that we now have. And because we now have all that information, which occurred after the motion deadline, we now can see a clear path towards motion for partial summary judgment on both of these issues. So, you know, with regard to the motion deadline, I mean, I suppose you can hold us to that strict deadline, but, you know, I think the question here really is, you know, what is going to make for an easier and smoother hearing before the OPA? What can narrow the issues? And what even partial rulings that the OPA may decide on these motions, some of those could easily narrow you know, what we have to do in terms of fighting it out at a trial. And so for that reason, that's why we asked and we filed this motion for leave to file the motion after the deadline had passed. And then secondly, you know, Mr. Keeler is arguing the merits of any motion for partial summary judgment. He's arguing, well, you know, their argument, you know, doesn't hold water because, you know, there was substantial completion in August. But, you know, those are issues for the motion for partial summary judgment, and I don't want to argue them here, though I have related to you what we believe is going to be our arguments. Those are arguments on the merits, and those are arguments that you all will have to decide if or when those motions are filed. For right now, we are just asking for permission to file the motion for partial summary judgment, and we believe that narrowing these issues would help not only, you know, the OPA, but us as well, because to the extent that we don't have to file certain exhibits, call certain witnesses, file additional documents, that would be extremely helpful for everyone concerned. Even if the motions are denied, you know, we would still have a clear path. You all would understand the issues, as would we, and we would know, you know, where we go from there. But at this point, all we're asking is a motion for permission to file a motion for partial summary judgment. In terms of the arguments that have been raised here about the acceptance of the ADA items or substantial completion, you know, we have a different view about it. What we're asking for is the opportunity to tell us our views on what we think is substantial completion and what we think is the acceptance of the work by DPW's full payment on these issues. Unless you have any other questions.
We'll take the motion for leave to file under advisement.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And then one quick question I have. Your client, I know, or you, on behalf of your client, you've already requested a hearing. Is that right?
Sorry?
You've already requested a hearing. Is that right?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And then, Mr. Keeler, did your client request for a hearing?
No, we did not.
You did not. All right. And then... one of the options you do have is if you feel the record is sufficient, you could waive your right to a hearing, and we could decide this based on the record and the filings that you've already made, almost like a summary judgment motion, but it would be you, Ms. Ariel, who would have to waive your right to a hearing. But that's up to you. If we're going forward because you requested one. If you don't withdraw the request, that's fine. I mean, we're going to have the hearing. And,
sure.
But if your goal is to eliminate this based on the record and based on the arguments made, that option's still open to you because you have the right to withdraw your request for the hearing and have it decided based on the record. Okay,
I understand that.
Yeah.
I just want to make clear that if we filed any motion for partial summary judgment, it would only be partial summary judgment. It would not be on the entire case. And the partial summary judgment would be based on two discrete issues.
Mm-hmm.
That would basically, if they were granted, for example, it would excise them from the case, and then we would go forward on the remainder.
Yeah, but we would still have to delay the hearing.
Yes.
To allow for the...
Yes.
The filing and then essentially the
yes.
The decision period on those two issues, and then we would if they were granted, we would still have to go. Well, bottom line, granted or not, we would still have to go forward with a hearing, one way or the other.
Which is Wednesday.
Yes.
Well, no, we'd have to continue that if we did this, but
no. But the hearing itself
is
not here.
We're
scheduled for Wednesday.
Yes.
Yeah.
This
anyway,
Wednesday.
So
we're still scheduled.
So that's
for
why I'm.
All right. So we'll take your motion under advisement. Okay. So your second motion is your motion for sanctions against DPW for failure to file That was, and this is your November 20th, 217 motion, so you have the floor for your motion for sanctions.
Thank you. So today I filed a reply memorandum in support of our motion for sanctions, and that reply has on page 2 a table of all the items that we've received and not received from DPW. And so the table sets out very, very much in detail all of the items that we've received and not received. I have the CDs that I have received from DPW here today, and I also copied them and attached them as exhibits A and B to
my
reply.
Still receiving stuff from DPW as of today?
Well,
is that my understanding of what you're
saying? Let me tell you what happened. So, So I received 3 CDs. Well, first of all, on October 30th or October 31st, they filed the procurement record. I did not receive anything on that day. Okay, that's very clear. There's nothing on October 31st that I've received, because the filings on October 31st that I compared online had a listing of many items. You know, 3 boxes, Buster Anderson's emails, plans and specifications, 8 CDs of plans and specifications. I haven't received any of those. And that's why before I filed my comments, I wrote to Mr. Keeler and said, where's the procurement record? I haven't received anything. And that's also why at our hearing on November 8th, you will recall, Mr. Camacho, I brought it up. I said, I haven't received anything. Where's the procurement record? And you ordered them to produce it. So then on November 3rd, he filed a supplemental procurement record, and I received 3 CDs. I received these 3 CDs, which he filed with the OPA, but then he mentions on the listing of the supplemental procurement, he mentions something else, and it's numerous emails that are identified as AL1 to AL6, D1 to D5, K1 to K9. I don't have any of those, okay? And then...
Up to now.
And then on November 13th, there was a supplemental procurement record, and that one I received. That's this one. I received this. And then, they filed their opposition to the motion for sanctions last week. And they said, just to be clear, we're giving you a second CD so that you can know what the record is. I didn't receive. I'm sorry to laugh, but I didn't receive that other CD. I mean, so today, this is all I've got. I've got 4 CDs. And I don't have the main one, which is filed on October 31st.
Okay, let me just ask this. Mr. Keeler, does she have with those, there are 5 CDs now?
4.
4 CDs. Does she have everything you filed with the OPA?
No, that's not all. DPW is completely intended to fully comply with everything. It was my understanding that I haven't had the benefit of reviewing Ms. Areola's response. I appreciate her chuckling with regards to the CD that was supposed to be attached to the government's recent filing. That was supposed to be. We have, with regards to the procurement record, there was reference to the August 8th pre-hearing. Immediately following that, I worked with DPW on August 13th. The procurement record was filed with the OPA in accordance with your order. Exhibit E to our response is a copy of the receipted copy from Ms. Areola's office. The CD, which is included in the receipt, meaning a copy of the cover of the CD, which states what it is, okay? I reviewed that specifically with my secretary, and that CD contains the procurement record, contains over 1,600 pages of documents.
I'm just trying to see what's
sure.
Here, what's not, because I know it's not you, Mr. Keeler, but I understand your client in general has some issues with procurement records, just generally speaking. That's putting it lightly, especially for big complex projects such as the bridge project, this one. So So you're saying this one CD, that Exhibit A, that had the procurement record proper, if you will?
Yes.
Okay, you're saying that you gave that to Ms. Areola?
My office did. It was served.
All right, now, Ms. Areola, did you receive that document?
No, it's not a document.
Or the CD, excuse me.
He said it was a CD and it was attached, but it wasn't attached. I don't have that. And I also don't have, you know, the October 31 CD, and I don't have the CD of November 3rd with all the emails that are listed as AL, D, and K. So, you know, I don't know where the disconnect is. We've searched our logs.
Okay, but he's saying that he has a, and I think, was that one of your filings?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And he actually included.
If I could add just one item where.
Okay, but hang on, but he did include, I believe it was your opposition to this.
Correct.
That your office had actually received that.
We received the opposition. We didn't receive a CD.
No, not the opposition. He's got the, that one CD containing the main procurement record.
The CD is stamped with my office? Where is that?
It's in his opposition.
To the opposition.
Wait, okay, but which CD are we talking about?
If I could just add one item.
Okay.
In addition to all the filings with the OPA, DPW has also responded to a FOIA request. We received an additional FOIA request. DPW tomorrow is going to be responding, and we'll be providing duplicate copies of everything.
Okay, but the FOIA request is a completely different matter. I mean, even if you gave her absolutely every shred of evidence of the FOIA request tomorrow, before I go there, let's just back up. So is there anything that you haven't, that you're aware of, that other than that one thing that's in dispute, okay, and I'll consider that in your opposition, but is there anything else that you haven't provided to Ms. Areola, like the emails that she's citing?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay, but did you give that today, or did you give that?
Double-checking to make sure.
Okay, but she's saying she got some of these CDs today? Is that correct?
No.
Oh, or when?
No.
Last week. He's saying that when he filed his opposition, he also filed another CD.
Yeah, and I've acknowledged that my secretary did not include that.
And what day was that?
That would have been Wednesday or Thursday.
Last week?
Of last week.
Yes.
Okay, how many, or what was that CD? I mean, what was on the CD?
That was the procurement record that we have a receipted copy August 13th.
Yeah, but your contention is that's the second time you've given it to her. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So,
Mr. Camacho, you can look through all these CDs. I've looked through them. I even had my assistant look through them to make sure that we have everything. I put this table together because we don't have everything. Okay. I mean. We just don't, maybe there's a disconnect in terms of the copying that was done. But for example, the latest CD that I received, this one, okay, has about over 1,300 pages, but it's the contract, the bidding documents, and all the communications to the bidders. It has said it has no Buster Anderson emails, you know, no three boxes of emails, no eight CDs of plans and specs. I don't have eight CDs. I have four CDs. And this one says, you know, they filed eight CDs of plans and specs.
Mr. Keeler, did you give copies of those CDs to the OPA? Do we have the identical CDs?
Yes. You have some hard copies.
I know we have hard copies, but I'm talking about just CDs.
I don't believe all CDs.
No. Okay, so. So you gave us some hard copies and you gave Ms. Areola some CDs?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any way that you could provide me the same CD, or better yet, Ms. Areola, is there any way that you can provide me copies of
these?
The, yes, so
Absolutely.
That I can review them?
Sure.
And take a look at them, okay?
Sure.
And I've got your table that I haven't been able to go through it because I think you filed it late, you know, this morning like you were supposed to, but I'll compare that to your table, okay? But that's all you have, is that right?
Yes, this is all that I have.
That's all you have, mm-hmm. All right.
I don't have any hard copies of anything. I only got these CDs.
All right.
Does the OPA have any objection to DPW filing a copy of its FOIA response?
No, we don't want to do or get into that. That's a completely separate matter.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So, we don't want it.
My worry is if Ms. Areola really hasn't gotten everything, that's going to affect the hearing, and we really cannot proceed with the hearing if in fact her allegations are true, okay? Because there's no way I'm going to force her to go forward blinded by not having documents that she should have had months ago, okay? But I got to double check, and I have to verify some of these allegations. And even if something's missing, I also have to weigh exactly what it is and how it pertains, if at all, to the issues that Ms. Areola raises in her client's appeal. But, yeah, so I look forward to seeing your CDs. Yeah.
How many CDs are in question that was supposed to have been transmitted to her?
Again, I haven't seen her response. I'd have to compare them side by side. So I can't answer that.
I mean, I think the question, though, right, is how many CDs did you file with OPA, and then how many CDs did I receive?
Well, no. The issue is that, because I've gone through what he's filed with the OPA, and there are a lot of hard copies. So most of what we have is actually in hard copy. It's not not in CD. Maybe some of the later stuff was, but the bulk of it is hard copy. He gave you hard copies, ostensibly, hopefully.
And those CDs that were given, allegedly given to Ms. Areola cannot, because you actually took the time, right? There's no extra CDs floating around.
No, my office would have copies of the CDs.
Okay.
Okay, but I want to see what she has on hand and take a look at that.
That's fine.
Okay.
I'll provide them.
No problem. And we'll have to give this motion some priority here and take it under advisement. Okay. So the third motion.
Well, just one more matter.
Go ahead.
I mean, I have asked for sanctions on it. I suppose that you're going to first determine whether or not the procurement record was actually provided to me and then determine our motion for sanctions. Because this is the problem. Okay, the problem is we filed our exhibit list, our witness list, our hearing brief, our comments. We filed our motions all on the basis of what I thought was the procurement record and what I received. You know, only to find that I haven't received probably more than half of what was actually filed. I mean, it looks like the biggest bulk of this was filed on October 31st from the very first day. And so, you know, we really feel substantially prejudiced by this, because even if I get the procurement record tomorrow or in the next couple of days, I'm going to have to supplement probably my comments, my hearing brief, my witness list.
I understand that. And if it's true, Ms. Areola, we're not going to force you to go forward if there's some, and we haven't in the past either. That is our precedent, because this is not a, sadly, an uncommon situation in the history of these types of appeals.
Okay. All right,
so the third motion is the motion to disqualify Thomas Keeler. It was filed on November the 27th. You have the floor on that third and final motion.
Thank you. So, DPW has asserted an advice of counsel defense, and ostensibly it's a defense against our claim of retaliation. They are arguing they didn't retaliate against Cortec. They relied on advice of counsel to extend the notice of termination and default and take all the actions they did this past summer, because they relied on advice of counsel and not in retaliation of Cortec's successful prosecution of appeals before this office. It is not a usual defense to assert. When you assert advice of counsel defense, it is a very serious matter, because what you do is you waive all attorney-client privilege communications concerning that matter, and usually it encompasses the entire project and the contract, and you also waive work product by an attorney. So when someone asserts an advice of counsel defense, they have to be very clear that they are going to rely on that defense, because they're opening up not just their counsel, but all of their communications with that counsel when they assert that defense. So DPW asserted their defense here in this case in response to our retaliation claim. They filed the declarations of Joaquin Blas, Felix Benavente, and John Moretto, which basically say pretty much the same thing. We issued the notice of termination and default against Cortec because we were advised by counsel that there was an issue under the performance and payments bond. And that issue was that if we don't file a claim within 1 year from the date of substantial completion, the bond may not be enforceable. Okay? So when you assert reliance on defense of counsel defense, you basically have to prove a couple of things. One is that your attorney gave you that advice. Number two, that you gave the attorney sufficient facts and information for the attorney to provide that advice. Third, that the attorney's advice must have been reasonable and prudent. And number fourth, that the client, DPW, relied upon it in good faith. Those are all the four elements for an advice of counsel defense. All four of those elements we are entitled to ask DPW about in order to establish whether they really have, you know, a good faith defense. But we are also entitled, under all of the case law that I have cited to you in our original motion and in our reply memorandum, we are also entitled to question Mr. Keeler about that advice. Because let's play this out. This is what's going to happen. DPW's witnesses and Mr. Moretto from Parsons are going to get up on the stand and they're going to say, you know, we didn't retaliate. We gave the notice of termination and default because Mr. Keeler told us to do it. And he told us because there was a question about the period of time in which to file a claim against the bond. So how do we counter that? I'll cross-examine them. I'll find out when's the advice, when was it given, what's the substance of the advice, you know, what information did you give your attorney, but that's all I can do. Under the law, we are entitled to question Mr. Keeler about his advice. We're entitled to ask him, when did you give that advice? What information and facts and due diligence and research did you do to give that advice, secondly? Third, have you ever given that advice before? Because this is not, you know, this performance and payment bond is pretty much a form bond that DPW has had before. Have they ever had a situation where they had to make a claim under it and they were bound by the one-year limitations period? Has Mr. Keeler ever given that kind of advice on another bond? All of these questions, they're fact issues and they're legal research issues that we're entitled to ask him about. Nobody else has that knowledge. Not Mr. Moretto, not Mr. Benavente, not Mr. Blas. Only Mr. Keeler has that knowledge about the facts and the events, but also about his advice. And it's not just about the notice of termination and default. If you recall, during this summer, there was a whole series of events that we brought up in our notice of appeal that we have claimed were acts in retaliation against Cortec. One is the final demand for completion that they issued. Shortly after, the OPA came out with the second decision on the second Simon Sanchez appeal. There was the letter in which they denied virtually all of Cortec's time extension requests. And then there was also addendum number 6, which came out less than 24 hours after they sent their notice of termination. And in our estimation, in our argument, Addendum 6 came out, which defined record of default in the third Simon Sanchez bid to basically wipe out Cortec as an eligible or participating bidder. Did he advise them with respect to all of those items? Final demand for completion, notice of termination and default, letter denying the time extension request, and addendum number 6. We're entitled to ask him all those questions. We can't just take it at face value that DPW's witnesses are going to say, yeah, he advised us, it wasn't retaliation. He advised us to send them out, so we did. We want to see drafts of those letters. We want to see what information was provided to him. We can't do that with just DPW and Parsons witnesses. We need to question Mr. Keeler about all of those facts and events. The most, maybe not disturbing, but the most critical issue that I find in DPW's response to our motion to qualify, disqualify, is the fact that they have not provided a single shred of evidence supporting this advice. They haven't given us a written opinion. They haven't given us a memorandum from Mr. Keeler. They haven't given us any emails supporting this advice. They haven't given us any communication, anything in writing supporting this alleged legal advice. So we are not going to take at face value that the advice was actually given. We want to know whether, in fact, it ever was given. And when you have a lack of written documentation, of course it raises the issue of credibility. Who's telling the truth here? What type of advice was given? What was the substance of that advice? If you don't have something in writing supporting that advice, how do we know it was even given? How do we know that this is just, you know, testimony from DPW saying, well, we didn't retaliate and we relied on him? I am not in any way impugning Mr. Keeler's integrity with this motion to disqualify. What I am saying is that when a client asserts advice of counsel defense in a proceeding like this, they open the door. We're entitled to go through that door, and we're entitled to question Mr. Keeler about the facts and circumstances about his advice. The other issue that I want to raise is the fact that if he acts as an advocate here in this proceeding and not as a witness, the cases that we have filed show that he doesn't even have to be disqualified as an attorney. Even if he's not the attorney here, he could significantly affect the outcome of the testimony and this hearing by leading his clients into questioning about which he has firsthand knowledge, and he acts as an unsworn witness. In other words, he's talking to his clients and getting information about them that only he knows, and he's acting as an unsworn witness. And the cases that we cite show that that's not right, that's not ethical. You can't do that under Rule 3.7. Because you're essentially injecting yourself into a proceeding without the benefit of being sworn as a witness. And that affects the integrity of these proceedings. That's why Rule 3.7 isn't just limited to opposing counsel objecting to it, they also allow the fact finder to make an objection about it. There is one exception that DPW has argued in this case. They've argued that it would be a substantial hardship to DPW because Mr. Keeler has been counsel for several years and had been counsel during this entire project. Shortly after I filed the motion to disqualify, which was on November 27th, I received a phone call from Mr. Keeler on December 1st. He informed me that he agreed that he was disqualified, that he was going to file a motion with the OPA, and he asked if I would agree to a delay in the proceedings. I said, of course. If you need to find time to find substitute counsel, you know, of course, we can have a delay. And he said that's what he would need to do. He would need to find substitute counsel for DPW. Then, on December 4th, after not receiving anything from Mr. Keeler or DPW, I telephoned him and asked, you know, what's going on? Are you filing a motion? Did you file something on Friday? Because I didn't receive anything. And he said, no, I talked to the Office of the Attorney General, and they said I'm not disqualified, and we're going to proceed to oppose the motion for disqualification. I said, okay, that's fine. The reason I bring up that conversation is because there is no substantial hardship where CORTEC is agreeable to a delay of the proceedings in order for them to find substitute counsel. We said that back on December 1st. We're saying that today. We'll continue to say that if Mr. Keeler is disqualified and they need to get new counsel. But what we're not willing to do is we're not willing to have a proceeding before the OPA where we have counsel who gave advice, who's going to be influencing and affecting the proceedings here with his clients on the stand while he's not on the stand, and we're not given the ability
to examine him. Okay, we understand that part of your argument. Do you have anything else?
Just one more thing, and okay. That is that Mr. Keeler's response or DPW's response is we can't disqualify the entire Office of the Attorney General. We didn't ask to do that. We only asked to disqualify any other attorneys who participated or assisted in giving the advice that they are relying upon in this case. Any other Attorney General who has not been involved in giving that advice, they probably and certainly should step in as substitute counsel. That is all that I have.
Thank you. Mr. Keeler.
The most disturbing thing from DPW's perspective with this motion is that there are no facts in support of it. There are no affidavits, no declarations, no documents that would indicate any malice on the part of DPW against CoreTech. There's simply no basis for it. There's no factual basis for it. It's based on pure speculation. The timing of DPW's August 23rd, 2017 decision to terminate and an action taken by a different division of DPW concerning an entirely different project a day later. But there's nothing to say this one is the same as this. There are no facts. No facts are presented, DPW would contend, because they don't exist. Here, they want to call me as a witness in hopes of establishing facts, but they don't exist. CoreTech properly cites the law in this with regards to this motion on page 3 of its filing, section A, where it states, it is well established that a lawyer is a quote-unquote necessary witness if his or her testimony is relevant, material, and unattainable elsewhere. And then it cites the estate of Carta and World Youth Day. Well, that's fine. The evidence here, the testimony here, is obtainable by other sources. We have provided 3 declarations, all stating that the advice was given 2 to 2.5 months before CoreTech's quote-unquote magical day, and that the Guam Transportation Group, which is a group that oversees, provides expertise, provides advice with regards to federal highway financed routed roads on Guam, that they never discussed Simon Sanchez High School. It wasn't a point of contention. It's not their project. What they discussed was a Route 1, Route 8 project. What they discussed was other federally highway financed projects. So the government's position is that there are individuals that can readily attest and testify to the advice. As such, the information, by definition, is obtainable elsewhere, and therefore the motion must fail. I concur with Cortex or Ms. Areola's final comment. I think we've got misunderstood. The government in our filing just simply said, I'm the only attorney that provided the advice. I didn't confer with my deputy. I didn't confer with other attorneys in my office. So I was just simply pointing out that however you rule, it should be directed towards me and me only. However, it should be obvious, since I'm the only attorney familiar with the project, that if the motion were granted, an extension is needed, as another assistant attorney general has to become familiar with the project.
Well, yeah, we understand that part of your argument, if that occurred.
Right, and then I would note that if there is a continuance, which I think is appropriate considering the circumstances, my office will probably have a different assistant attorney general handle the case.
That's if this motion passes.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
So this conversation that you, that Ms. Areola states you had, did you in fact state that you thought you should be disqualified?
I can't recall exactly how it was articulated, but I certainly said that I could see where I could be a witness, and that I would agree to having another attorney from my office substitute him.
Okay, but is it also true that later on, as she states, you came back and said that that wouldn't be necessary because after further reflection, you didn't think you were disqualified? Is that my understanding of what you said?
The first part was talking to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Second part was reviewing it with my deputy and the attorney general, and their position was that we're not disqualified. And,
okay, is that your position now, though?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so you don't, despite what you may have said to her earlier, you don't think you're disqualified now? Is that a correct statement?
Yes.
Okay. But she does raise some issues that might have some ethical, professional ethical implications, but despite all that, you don't feel you're disqualified?
No.
All right. So, Ms. Areola, did you have anything else?
Yeah, just a few points. Mr. Keeler has addressed the merits of the retaliation claim, and that's not what is at issue here. What is at issue is the motion to disqualify. But just talking about that for a moment, we believe in our notice of appeal and in our hearing brief that we have made out a prima facie case of retaliation, and that means that on the face of the facts and the evidence that we've produced so far, we have made out a claim for retaliation. And that's because the primary issue in this case is causal connection. And it's what is the temporal proximity between the events that occurred. For example, the second is the first decision on the Simon Sanchez appeal in November of 2016. And prior to that, CORTEC had filed an extension of time request and change order request.
Okay, we have your...
Right, so I didn't want to get into that. Yeah, okay. I just wanted to let you know that
we understand those arguments.
Thank you. So just getting to the motion to disqualify, I think it's really important to tell you how I think this is going to play out at the hearing, okay? We're going to have Mr. Keeler get up, and at the end of the hearing, he's going to say, you should believe my clients who testified here today because I told them, I gave them legal advice. I advised them. I told them, send out the final demand for completion. Send out the letter of, you know, denying the time extension request. Send out the notice of termination and default. And you should believe them because, after all, I gave them that advice. It's unfair. That's what Rule 3.7 is all about.
Okay, but he hasn't made that argument in a closing. We're not even at closing. Are you? That's just if he or you assume.
If he is not disqualified as an advocate, if he is not disqualified, he will make that argument, and he will have to say that. That's the only argument that he can make. You know, he has to say you have to believe my clients, you have to believe these witnesses, and you have to believe that I gave him that advice. That's the problem with being an advocate and a necessary witness, is that you're arguing for yourself, and is that arguing for yourself or your client? That's where the lines get blurred. It's unfair that I'm at a disadvantage because I'm sitting here listening to him while he's standing up and saying, you know, Of course you should believe him because they said I gave him advice. Of course I did. How do we know that? We don't know because I haven't had the opportunity to question him. And if he's not disqualified, I'm not going to have that opportunity. We're going to have to take at face value only what the DPW witnesses say. But there's a whole host of questions that need to be asked, Mr. Keeler, about this alleged advice. Questions like, why wasn't this opinion in writing? If it's not in writing, it's so important whether or not the payment and performance bond, you know, is enforceable. Why isn't it in writing? Why isn't there communication between you and your client about this? You know, so he says all these other witnesses can testify to that. No, they can't.
Okay, we understand that argument.
Okay. All right. But those are all the issues that I have. I would only note one other item, and that is that I am really not sure how we can proceed on Wednesday with this timing, and with even if you came out with a decision today. I would have liked to issue subpoenas last week or today for a hearing
on
Wednesday.
Well, we did grant you half the subpoenas you requested.
Right. That was the one to the Takagi and Associates.
That's
but
correct.
I still haven't received anything for on our motion for reconsideration to Tom Sterling. Mr. Sterling is not Takagi's counsel. He is counsel for the bonding companies, Fidelity and Zurich. That's completely different from Takagi. And he is also the person that both Mr. Keeler and I have been involved in discussing the whole matter of the bond. But
well, your
sorry.
Request for those subpoenas has already been denied.
Okay, I did file a motion for reconsideration.
We will look at that, and
okay.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get a decision soon. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Are there any other issues we need to take up?
No.
Yes.
Yeah. One item. Both Ms. Ariola and I have prior to this hearing discussed the that we think it's appropriate that the hearings be continued, that owing to a number of the issues that we think it would be better and in the best interests of both parties to reschedule this week's hearings.
Okay, so you're both are attempting to reschedule. Okay, so you both agree that if we were to reschedule the hearing, you'd agree to that, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and on what grounds?
Well,
go ahead.
I think a number of issues are addressed that have been discussed today. Number one, I want to make sure Ms. Ariola has absolutely everything. Number two, continuing the hearing also addresses the objection of myself serving as counsel.
Well, the in terms of the hearing itself, it's that one issue, and I am going to take a good hard look at that, but that's the one I am most concerned of, whether or not she has all the materials and whether or not she got them in a time period that would allow her to go through the somewhat voluminous information. That's really, as a hearing officer, one of the things I'm most concerned about. So that's why I'm eager to see. Do you think you can give those CDs to me by about 4 o'clock this afternoon?
Sure, of course.
Okay.
Yes, I'll have copies made back as soon as I get back.
If you can deliver those to my office in the GCIC building,
okay.
I'd appreciate that so I can review those. Yeah, so we'll take these under advisement as well as the I guess I'll just call it a stipulation of both parties to continue the hearing that's scheduled for this Wednesday. Now we're not there yet. But the hearing is still scheduled till further order. Okay.
From
a timing point of view, let me ask this question, okay? Because the one that concerns me the most is the completeness of the procurement record that she has. Assuming, based on what you've just said today, you don't have it. Assuming you get it sometime by end of day tomorrow, how much more time would you need?
Because as I view...
Well, assume it's a lot. Assume
it
it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's 6 boxes in our office. Okay.
Would it be 2 weeks? Because we are approaching the holidays already.
Let's just move with that, because that's the one that's going to change this. And assume it's, you know, a lot, like 1,400 to 2,000 pages. So based on that, how much time would you need?
Well, I believe I can be available the week of January 8th.
Because the problem that we have right now and what we were trying to do here, okay, because Mr. Keeler, you're a part of this, okay. The outcome of this hearing, okay, will really determine whether or not we have the other hearing. Mm-hmm. Because that's solely based on this hearing. And that what that does is, why should we proceed next week to have that hearing until we have this hearing? And that's the whole rationale for switching them, mm-hmm. okay? Because this hearing is going to determine the validity of the appeal in the next hearing, okay? So that's why, for us, this hearing is tantamount
right.
to move. So 3 weeks is what you need?
Yes.
Would you be available around January the 8th, Mr. Keeler, if we did continue the hearing?
Assuming you are, okay. Assuming worst yes. case you're not, okay, would that be sufficient time for the legal counsel of the Attorney General's office also?
Yes.
Okay. Assuming you are, it's not an issue.
Correct.
Okay. So those are really the two fundamental issues, okay?
So one way or the other, okay. January... Okay.
The other, and I'm going to also say this, the partialing is not something that I'm in favor of, and I've told Mr. Okay. The partialing of your leave a motion to partial, that to me, I think from our perspective, and that's more maybe legal things, but from the OPA's perspective, is not something I believe in, okay, and partialing out. And I've told them, no, I don't want it partial.
Okay,
so let me, I'm
so
just
that's
saying.
Denied.
Okay.
Well, we'll just say it's because it's still under
consideration. But no, I said no. I don't want a partial because I don't understand
strong,
that.
I mean, we are going to.
Because if you're
going to
tell me the whole
right.
case, tell me it all at one time.
Okay.
That's the way I believe in me. So, assuming that, okay, let me, something happened to my calendar now. Assuming that, we're looking at January 8th, which is now 3 weeks. Today is the 11th. That's actually 4 weeks. That's actually four whole weeks, because this week, next week, January 8th. But given everything else, and so the concern here is not so much for the road project, okay, because the road project by itself is not an issue. The concern here, and more for the, is Simon Sanchez. Mr. Leongro, you and I were at that hearing this morning, okay. And so what that does is further delay the decision, because that's the whole basis of the appeal of why CORTEC has filed appeal number 1709. Until we decide this, we don't know whether or not it's going to, I don't know what the decision is and how that's going to affect DPW. All right. So that's the reason for us wanting to have this decision, this appeal move forward. You definitely need 4 weeks?
I do, because I actually have other trials and matters in the next coming weeks.
I know, but from a priority, from the people of Guam's perspective, okay, your other trials really are, pardon the expression, not of our concern.
No,
Simon Sanchez is our concern, okay? So is there any way we could start that earlier? It's not going to be that much earlier, like, say, January 2nd, because that then would give you the 3 full weeks as opposed to 4 weeks' time. Is that?
I have to look at my schedule. Uh-huh. I'm not going anywhere, but I have other matters. Like, I've been up to my neck in divorce and child custody.
Again, your other trials are not my concern.
No sympathy there. There's no sympathy for me, no sympathy for you.
They're not my concern.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's why I chose the 8th. That week I also have a trial.
All right.
Beginning the 3rd.
Okay. So we'll...
Huh? Well, okay, we'll take all of this under advisement, but based on the fact that the two of you have already agreed that you should continue, we will look at a continuance also.
Okay, and we'll try to issue a decision tomorrow, one way or the other.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
We're off the record at 2:02 p.m.
Okay.